God, it's so much easier said than done. Should we start the episode? We're already saying fun stuff.
We're saying good stuff. This time I'm not going to open the unicorn jar. I'll save that to get the nose in return. We're back. You're in the control here, so you can hit the thing.
I'm going to hit the thing, but remember, you're going to say welcome, introduce yourself. I'm going to say who I am, and then you're going to say something whack, all right? That's where we're up to.
All right.
No pressure. Let's go, okay. Fizzle.
All right, let's do it. G'day, I'm Jason Fox.
And I'm John Anthony.
And you're listening to Kindred Spirits, Something Whack.
Something familiar, something peculiar. Oh, how good is this? I got the best burn from my old man. He's one of my best mates. I love my dad so much. And
look at this. You're just flowing through from my... Because I'd forgotten my intro bit. So
I thought that was
something
it.
Whack. Yeah. No, that's it. That is it. But like, look at you pick it up so smoothly. Like, thanks, man.
I thought something whack was your whack. Yeah. Insert whackness. That's just like the fake ad. We pretend like we know what the fake ad is, but neither of us know until 2 weeks after it's been made.
But yes, go on. What were you saying?
This is a fun conversation. Like, don't you find the people closest to you, the ones who you love the most and instinctively the ones who you require the most adoration from, are the ones that will just blissfully, like blowing a feather from the palm of your hand, knock you down as many perches as possible? I'm telling my dad about Kindred Spirits, and about maybe a month before, he'd mentioned another podcast that he'd been listening to. Now, I'm not going to name the podcast because you and I aren't into punching down. It's not our flavor, right? So let's just say it was called The Bamboozle Brothers, right? And so he said to me, oh, son, I'm listening to the podcast Bamboozle Brothers. I haven't got a clue what either of them are saying. It's the most confusing thing I've ever encountered. The second I turn it on, it just melts my brain out of my ears. I've got no idea what's happening. And so I said, okay, cool, cute story, Dad, but you can see where this story is going, can't you, Fizz? He said to me at lunch the other day, look, John, I've had a listen to Kindred Spirits. It's a bit Bamboozle Brothers.
Yeah.
he needs to make sure that I know that for him. Oh,
yeah, that's right. Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's not hitting.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, my mother, who I'm quite fortunate reads my newsletters, will 2 out of 3 times tell me, I got your newsletter. It's quite long, isn't it? Which I'm acutely aware of, but
this is cool, isn't it? Because this is, we've blown something open straight away. Feedback, and the idea that we're into it, we're onto it, we're bent on the idea of using curiosity as an engine of growth. We understand instinctively that it's usually supposed to motivate, inspire, propel, encourage, but sometimes it doesn't do that, and it poses this early question: when are you supposed to pay attention? And when do you discard it? Because if you're just saying only pay attention to the good stuff, right? Only revel in the high fives, well, then that's dangerous, isn't it? That's a positive delusion. I'd love your brain on that one, Fizz.
It's really lovely you brought this up because I thought this could be one of the domains we explore today. I don't know if I like feedback most of the time. There's been a time where I would actively create almost like a semi-permeable membrane, particularly if you're fresh off doing something live, like you're fresh off stage or something like that. Yeah. That's not the time to receive feedback. I'm already doing my spiral, you know, of like all the things that I could have done better and all the things I missed. But if I receive unsolicited feedback, there's almost like this jelly-like field where it'll... Have you seen Dune, the movie?
Yeah.
You know, when they're doing that, they've got the force field and you have to kind of like... You have to kind of go slow for it to get through. Mm. Well, cool. I've got that force field and it kind of sits there suspended. And then I wait until I'm well rested and I've got time to consider it and where it may have come from. And often you and I both know feedback is a projection.
Yep.
Having said that, though, solicited feedback is wonderful. And if you can be quite specific about what you're looking for, that's fantastic.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think particularly for something like this, it's new, we're trying to be anti-fragile, we're enjoying ourselves, we're hoping that it resonates. You know, I would go as far as suggesting that we're feverishly, like a couple of thirsty little truffle pigs, looking for feedback, but we're doing it to reinforce how much fun we're having and kind of ignite, keep that spark lit that is our self-perpetuating drive to keep making these episodes. So I often wrestle with it because I really love your point that not all of it is useful. You know, I like the idea about trying to stay, what was that membrane thing? I like that membrane flavor. But then, but if we do need it, it's human nature, isn't it? There's a part of you that's looking for it to sort of let you feel safe and certain and validated and not compromise and plugging into relatedness and all these primal things that we love. But then does that mean that we're supposed to ignore people when they go, ah, it's a bit bamboozled, brothers?
It's a mess. Well, I mean, yeah, gosh, my ego is so fragile to these things that, like, I will rarely ask for feedback. Sometimes you get the automatic feedback after an event and something like that. I'll take a while before I look at that. And that's partly because I want to preserve the uniqueness. You know, you don't want to become well-rounded because you want to be loved by 20% of the room, not loved at all by 10% and liked by the remaining 70% rather than just liked by 100%. Yeah. But there's this thing where we have artist friends, and I remember sometimes like writers and stuff like that, where a close friend of ours would ask for feedback, but then they learned, and now I do this too, where they say, look, when I say I'm asking for feedback, I'm just looking for validation. Just say nice things, please. That's all I want.
Just tell me that it's good.
And I'm like, honestly, what I'm craving, and I saw you like this lovely post from Demetria or something. Yes. I might have mangled the name. I was just like, it's so nice to know when you are resonating, and it doesn't have to be with everyone, but just to get that feedback that there is a resonance.
Exactly.
Like you get this in real time, right? When you're presenting, when you as a musician, you know when it's connecting and it's resonating because there's a frequency attunement.
Immediately.
But the internet, there's like a bit of a gap. Like we publish this, then there's crickets and there's that kind of weird hollow feeling and stuff like that. But it's just knowing that it's connected with someone, and you know that's enough.
And I think you're onto it. I think it's about the connection, you know, and the connection usually comes through in the form of an echo. And this is exactly what you were talking about. And I did see the comment because I couldn't stop thinking about all of the music that I've published since I was a 19-year-old kid. And there is this moment of underwhelming terror when you throw what you've made into the void, and there's almost this sense of melancholy because you did it and it meant something to you. Like, you know, there's a part of you that knows that it matters, but this is the part that we're starting to marinate in. You know, does it matter if it doesn't connect with anyone? You know, I know we're getting a bit
philosophical. Do something that matters.
Where is it? Shout out MBS. Shout out
again. We can't go an episode without shout out to MBS.
I know, and I've got it always within an arm's reach.
I have an MBS thing that I picked up from a podcast that he was on that I'll talk about in a moment. But that this thing, like, if it didn't connect, there is something. There's something in this. I had a point. It was just gone. You carry on with what you were saying.
Well, to bring you back, it was that lovely comment, and I saw it on Facey, where you'd published your recent newsletter that I think only came out in the last 24 hours, and you were saying something that I think a lot of people can relate to. When you bleed into something and you try, and it comes with a cost of not just your time, but your soul and your creativity and all of your levels of energy, and you're doing it because you're trying to have to create a contribution, which means you're trying to have some kind of influence. You're not doing it under the idea that it will have no impact. There's supposed to be an impact, or you wouldn't do it. There's always this weird moment where you fire it out there and you're kind of waiting for the ricochet. You're waiting for the echo. You're waiting for the rebound. And in that kind of weird void where there's nothing, I don't know. There's just something so unnerving and existential about it.
Love how you zoom in on this exquisite window.
Mm.
And I loved your phrase of the melancholia. Mm. Like you let it go, and there's almost like there's a mourning or something like that. I imagine this is how a parent might be when their child goes off to, you know, live somewhere else or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is not in my control anymore. It's out there.
Yes.
And then there's this interesting thing, right? So it's kind of like, is there anyone else resonating out there? It's like a sonar ping, and you sometimes might get a glimmer of warmth back, and it's just a saying amongst complexity practitioners and, you know, this has resonated, is find the others. Or as my friend Tyson Youngerporter would say, find the other others, you know, the folks that are picking up on the frequency. But then there's this thing that happens, and you probably get this sometimes, where people do pick it up, and then what the meaning they make of it is not actually the meaning that you intended.
All the time.
But it's kind of what they've evoked. And all there's the a time. Kind of, I've had to learn, sorry, I learned, I had to, I've had to learn that's okay. That's their thing. Whereas before I used to feel this like, oh, I'm being misunderstood. That's not quite the point that I made. And I'm kind of robbing them of their experience. You know what I mean?
I think it's a breakthrough. And I love that you went there, because I think about this all the time. You know, so one of the reasons why I love songwriting is because I obviously love language and I love lyrics. I put an enormous amount of energy into all the lyrics in all of my songs. But people who listen to them closely often say to me, oh, yeah, I get how in that you're talking about that time when that girl from the northern beaches broke your heart, you know, and how your mum doesn't like you. and they've completely misconstrued. But it doesn't matter, because I think the thing we're both agreeing on is the second you release it, now it's open to interpretation, and whatever they get from it is what they need. I'll never forget when I was in high school and there was a certain poet who removed her poem from the syllabus because she didn't like the way that students were misinterpreting some of the imagery in their essays. And I remember even as a kid, 17, 18, thinking, no, that's a glitch. Like, if you can't cop people misunderstanding your art or what you've made, then you shouldn't release it. You should Dorian Gray that shit. Make it and then lock it under the stairs.
That's so interesting. Like, it's real for me right now, because Simon Waller, shout out Simon Waller, recently evoked something that I wrote a post about in 2018, so 8 years ago.
Mm.
And I was reminded of, I went through this phase of deleting most of what I have done.
I remember this. You burnt everything. I remember this.
Yeah. I think it was this, I don't know, descent into soul and the dark abyss and the kind of... I was like grieving and all these other things were going on. But it was a breakdown
before a breakthrough fizzle.
But yeah. But it's kind of cool. It was part of a deepening and then burning off of that. But then I was looking back, I found some of it in an old Squarespace site, and I was like, this writing wasn't so bad. I feel like I was a little swept up in my own solipsism, but it wasn't so bad.
Mm.
And there's something about a little distance that can give perspective. What is it, Hilmer of Clint, that... did all the artworks and then she had a specific thing, do not release this to the public until, I think, 20 years after her death or something like that. It was like,
I love that, mate. But why brilliant. What's wrong with you entertaining that you might be what they call a discovery artist, okay? You're someone who creates moments of genius and then they just percolate in some dormant dungeon, some corner of the internet, some dusty library for some future person to dig up down the line. You could add meaning for a future focused state that you can't even simulate. I love that. Do you know Nick Drake? He's one of my favorite folk artists. So this is such an awesome example. Nick Drake, he was signed to Island Records around the same time as Cat Stevens. He's my hero. He's my musical hero. He released only 2 albums while he was alive. No, that's a lie. He released 3 albums before he passed away at the very young age of about 26. And when he was alive, no one cared about his music. He was a fantastic guitarist, a pretty good singer. He wrote beautiful music. He hated playing live. There's stories of him being on stage with his back to the audience. But one of his songs was called Fruit Tree. And the lyrics are, no one cares about you but the rain and the air. And he basically says, don't you worry, you won't flourish until your stock is in the ground, right? So he's talking about the idea that it won't be until the fruit falls off you and dies, that you'll flourish. And one of the last lines is he says, don't you worry, they'll stand and stare when you're gone. And what happens, Jace? He dies, and now he is massive. He's a cult artist. You Google him, and the guy is so posthumously famous. And he knew it. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy from the top. Maybe you're a discovery artist, legend. You shouldn't be burning anything that you make.
I can already sense what's going to appear in the bad advice at the end of this episode. Have you considered dying?
You might want to. We should delete this episode before we release it.
That's right. I think there is something about shedding in the sense of adult development, and there is something about about the descent. Like, it's not just about. I know you're transcend, but you're also descend. Like, there's something about the the deepening, not just about growth, but the deepening, which is a reconciling, because I think that all of us, and this is certainly amplified in this current epoch we share as a civilization, all of us have to kind of create a socialized self, something that is both, as Bill Plotkin would say, authentic and accepted by at least one social group. So... But in the process of constructing that, sometimes we get swept up and there's parts of us that it's not really us. Because I know for me, coming back to the advice thing that we were talking about before here, or feedback, when I was a very young neophyte writing my first book, The Game Changer, I had a lot of advice given to me and feedback around what will and won't work in the world. And I heeded a lot of that and I ignored a fair bit. But even before that, I would have released the book a lot sooner, but people told me, no, don't write about games. That's just, people think that's just gambling or casinos or sport. And I was like, And I come back to the well-intended advice of the parents who are coming to you with love, but from perhaps a different generational context. And they mean well. but it may not be the right thing for you. So then it comes back to the question within all of us: what do we take on board, and what do we like hold in suspension? And
that's it, mate.
Because I feel like there is a lovely offering whenever anyone gives feedback, even if it is projection. There's still something to learn from that, but it doesn't mean that we have to take it all on board. I mean, I wish I was landing at a deeper point here, but it's something.
Well, it's an ongoing conversation, and you know, I look forward to seeing what other fellow kindred spirits have to say about this. But my instincts is it got something to do with the way that we tune our filters? Are you with me, friend? Like, you tune your filter in a way where you remain curious. You're not only hunting the high fives. You're open to growth. You're open to being pushed out of your comfort zone. You're open to being challenged. But surely there's a way to calibrate and galvanize your filters so that you use it only as an upward spiral and never in a way that lets you knock yourself off your own perch, or even worse, to demotivate. I'll never forget this one. I launched an EP a few years ago. I was in a band called Professor, and it was one of the best bands I'd been in because everyone in the band was significantly better at music than me. And this is usually my mode, Jace. I try to surround myself by people who just squash me creatively because that enhances everything that I'm doing. But we had this massive EP launch at a venue in Sydney, and it was one of the best nights that I'd had in about 10 years. You know, it was this seamless set that ran with all these weird activations in between the songs that were sound bites from an old Bumblebee horror movie, and the whole thing kind of ran like a concept album. And I walked off stage on cloud nine. You know, I remember feeling so amazing. I'll never forget when a friend came up to me and said, "Hey, listen, John, I'm about to say something to you."
Okay.
Just have a think about the setup. I mean, if that's not a loaded gun, right? If that's not a loaded, I don't know what is, right? But I still wasn't ready because what he said was something that was so it was so close to my character that I realized that I was never going to be able to do anything about it. He said something like, "Hey, when you're on stage, settle down." You know, when you're up there and you're performing, you know, you might want to calm down. And I think what he was trying to say, that maybe he found the way that I sing and move with my guitar off-putting. I'll never really understand what was driving it. But I remember it hurt me a lot because I thought, I can't really do anything about that. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm literally up there in the nucleus of my soul's purpose. I can't think of a time where I've been happier, apart from when I married my miracle wife or when my two daughters were born. I can't articulate a more happy time. So, you know, it's not hard to simulate, is it? You're having arguably one of the best times of your life, and someone watches you do that and says, settle down. What do you do with that?
Yeah, it's, you know, if only we all had a bit more of the curiosity, warmth, empathy, and tact to know timing of these things. And even the way that this is framed, and that, you know, it's like, I've had similar things too. And nowadays I would like to think that I'm better equipped, but like when How to Lead a Quest came out, I had a conversation with someone I really look up to, a mentor, and I was really looking forward to that conversation. And they said to me, you know, that paragraph about highlighting ideas that you find resonant and using a different colored highlighter for the ideas that you disagree with. That's my IP. But I was so junior and stuff, and this is, it completely sidelined me, because this is someone I looked up to, and I went into this kind of junior apologetic follow my sword thing, and I was like, hang on, no, I learnt that when I was doing my PhD in research and literature reviews. This is not your IP.
I'm pretty sure neither of you are the first person to come up with the idea of color coding stuff that you're trying to learn.
But yeah, the timing, it was just literally the day after a book launch. I was fresh. I was like, yeah, it's so the question that you were saying, like, if, at least this guy had the grace to say, I'm going to say something. God damn.
I'm about to say something, which is good. It is, the subtext there is brace for impact, isn't it?
It is. I mean, this is the thing. This is a side note. I can't stand when people want to be brutally honest. I've had people ask me, can I be brutally honest with you? And I'm like,
no.
Just be honest. No need for brutality.
Can I be brutally honest? No, I prefer a velvet glove softly delivered. Yeah, what is it that you were actually going
to
say?
I don't know, right? So, but there's this thing, right? So if I was to, this wouldn't happen in reality. I talk a big game, but I'm like soft as pudding in real life. If someone's like, I'm about to say something with you, I can immediately say, this is in the ideal world. But I would imagine I would be physically just turning a little bit aside. This is an Aikido move, because when energy is coming towards you, you want to kind of move with it, right? But literally, Kim and I did a course with Michael Grinder, who is the brother of John Grinder, the founder of neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah.
This is, of course, a non-verbal dynamics and so on. When you're accepting a compliment, you can, you know, accept it and like put your hand on your chest, and it's like really taken to heart. But when it's a criticism, you want to kind of sidestep it and turn it into a space that we're looking at, like a concept, like, or even the past.
Interesting.
You know?
Interesting.
And that there is a turn that I would literally physically do when I'm sensing impeding feedback that may be critical in nature, where I'm trying to sidestep myself, or at least, if it is a criticism about me, it's a past version of me that showed up in the particular context, and it may have been me in an amplified persona. And yeah, we can critique that, but it's not criticism of me.
Yes.
I'd like to have the perspicacity to be able to do that, but I doubt that
Well, I like it though, because if you think about it, maybe we're starting to get into how you fine tune your filter. So, you know, this idea you mentioned earlier about the socialized self, you know, it lets me serve as a term that I've been looking forward to talking to you about, which is the idea of adaptive authenticity. You know, I've been talking about this a lot for the last couple of years, because I don't know if you've seen this, but a lot of the people I'm supporting, a lot of my clients are giving their people a really misguided directive. They'll say to them, hey, you know what you guys need to do? Bring your one true self to work. Right? Have you heard this bullshit? You've got to bring.
Yeah,
you should bring your one true self.
Yeah, now, that's bullshit.
It flies in the face of reality. We both know there's no one true you.
We contain multiple
versions, and so I like your angle here, because this is something to think about. You know, if the piece of feedback that they're serving up to you, you know, if they've caught you off guard and you've let them through to behave in a way that's brutally honest, then they're not talking to anyone, Jason, are they? In this example, they're talking to the version of you that presented that day as the speaker in that context, built on what was happening within that ecosystem. And so in some ways you can deem the whole thing less offensive and just be a little bit more sort of meta and observational about it, because they're talking to a facet of something about you versus speaking into your soul.
Yeah. Yeah, the multitudinous, multifaceted, mercurial, ever-evolving, nebulous, intermittently continuous self-concept that we groom over time and develop and deepen into. Mm. Yeah, that's stay kind of like shapeshiftery and fluid with this stuff. Like, and you know, it's also there's the filter, right? And part of what we're filtering is, and what is our relationality here, and what's the timing and the context, what's going on for them, and all of this stuff in an ideal world would happen in a long walk in the forest, and there's time, and we're relaxed and nourished and hydrated, and all of these things. It could be something that, you know, they were a bit hangry, they needed a cookie, they've been overlooked, and they're a bit pissed off, and the music was too loud, and you know, it's like,
You'll never know. You know, there are so many things that feed that type of banter.
This is a good segue into what I wanted to bring up. So, we caught up at Whiskey and Ailment. Mm-hmm. We've also done another video together in my room here when you were over for dinner, which I fucked up the timing of the recording of it. But that was nice to hang out with.
And for whiskey listeners, it was a Glendronach single cask. Oh, there it is. I mean,
We cracked this one open. That was exquisite.
I was honored to be involved in that corking legend. Yes.
We got a photo. That was nice. So we caught up a Whiskey and Ailment. We had received like some feedback, and it's been lovely hearing from folks and how it resonates. And then there was one bit of feedback where I was like, oh, it made me really second guess the way that I showed up. And then I was like, but I don't want to get into this hypercritical loop about what other people will think, because I think part of the charm of what we're doing here is showcasing a real conversation between friends, the type of thing that folks can eavesdrop in. But then we segue to this lovely thing where we went into this conversation about how will we handle things when things go wrong. We realize we had a beautiful friendship so far. Mm. It hasn't been for a long time, but it's been a good time.
That's right.
We've been over for dinner. But we both knew that it's going to be at some point, there's going to be something that happens and we piss piss each other off.
Yes.
And we know it's going to happen. And the question is, like, what are we going to do? Mm. And I loved your immediate response. Do you remember what you said?
No, please remind me. I don't remember.
Oh,
remember
it was great. It's like you just let's address it in real time as soon as it comes up. Like you don't let it fester. And you did this thing about like what happens. And we know what it's like. You say you feel, you know, slighted or something happens and it grates against you. But instead of addressing it in real time, you don't say anything and then it festers away and then you start to build a narrative and then your actual memory of the situation drifts away. And then a month later, you've got this distorted kind of character monster avatar of this person, what they've done to wrong you.
That's right, mate. That's right. Yeah. And, you know, it's such a cool thing to dig up, because we're talking about gentle nudges, real-time observations, get involved in any discord as soon as possible, serve it up as fresh as it possibly can, because one thing we're both agreeing on is that memory is completely distorted. It's so cooked. It's so cooked. And, mate, you know I've been studying neuroscience for a couple of years now, and you and I had an interesting conversation at Whiskey and Ailment. We keep dropping the name of that venue like there's some agenda. So we had a great convo there about the way that your brain is wired. And, you know, most people are either prevention or promotion focused, but most of us are prevention focused. We're thinking about what could go wrong, how are we going to fix that. It's that whole threat thing is one of the things that drives, you know, our attention. It really does. And so I think if you think about the spirit of a friendship like ours, you know, we this is a promotion-focused friendship. That's the way that it's put together. You know, ever since you and I have started hanging out with each other, it has felt for me only like an upward spiral. And so I'd be very keen to work overtime to stay on that frequency with you, brother. And so I'm glad that you're on board. The moment, and it's not an if, it's a when, but the moment one or both unlikely pisses each other off, I think it's more likely to be a misunderstanding. There'll be a misread. Don't run away with it. Don't run away with it. Share your assumption. Here's the story that I'm telling myself about what it is that I think just went down between us, and give the other one an opportunity to either lock it down or dissolve the assumption.
I love that. I think you're a little bit more optimistically oriented than I am. My field tends to encompass that which could be considered grim as well. But you have done me a great service in helping to lift me into a more upbeat frequency and field. I think there's still something infinite play. It's still trickster. It's still keeping your eyes open to. It's just a choice of how to respond and act in this you know, period of history that we all share in this world. There is a thing, right? When it's like the body is the first thing that knows, like the body knows before the mind does. Like, and what I've known is, like, even on stage, yeah, because I wax quite authentic, and it's quite unscripted, as we both are, and it's real and it's present and it's in service to the moment. But sometimes you catch yourself saying something and it's like, oh, that sounded off, or that didn't quite work. And and like the thing is, you just address it in real time. Don't kind of file it away and then brood on that for like months to come, years to come later, remembering that one cringe moment that you did that thing and then didn't address it in real time. You just dance with it in the moment, and people love that. People
love
it.
Right. It's like, I think you're right.
Better to dare greatly and to fumble and fuck it up and then make repairs than to play it safe and calculated the whole time. You know what I mean?
And the biggest mistake you'll make as a speaker, or when you're up in front of large groups of people trying to either engage, persuade, entertain, inform, the biggest mistake you'll ever make is to somehow position yourself as the oracle. You know, listen as I download this onto you. Yuck. I mean, that's the least relatable thing that I can fathom. And so, you know, I think you're really clever and instinctive choice to behave in a way that's vulnerable. And I think the way you and I do it is a similar angle. It's through the conduit of self-ironic humor. You're allowed to take the piss out of yourself in real time, and I find that helps people to relax, because what you're signaling is, hey, I'm not taking myself too seriously. It doesn't mean that what we're talking about isn't serious, but do we, you know, all this gravity, man? What's with the gravity?
There is, like, you've gotten onto this, an exquisite topic that I love. It's a metamodern sensibility of sincere irony and ironic sincerity, the kind of the propulsive paradox between sincerity and irony. Now, if you just have sincerity, then it can feel like either too earnest, too serious, but too monoculture, and you haven't actually considered things from a different angle, and you haven't actually considered the fact that you know, how this might be received. If it's too ironic, then it doesn't have heart. You're being so clever.
You're all sarcasm and bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
But sincere irony means that I know that you know that I know that you know that this sounds like bullshit, but it's also something that I'm speaking of from the heart here. I know how it sounds, but this is true for me. You know what I mean?
I love that, man.
There's an enhanced security.
You're right. I'll never forget. I had a big one about a year ago, maybe a bit longer, and for this keynote, the people and culture person wanted me to sort of, I don't know if this ever happens to you, I won't call it a dress rehearsal, but this lady who I really enjoyed supporting wanted to be pretty close to what it was I planned on talking about during the keynote. And a lot of it was through the lens of positive psychology. It was heaps of interventions designed to help people do a lot of that stuff that's starting to get icky. Talking to Claire recently about words like flourish and thrive and how they make people want to gag, right? But I'm unpacking positive psych, real-time interventions, and at one point, when I was practicing with her, I said, oh, yeah, is there anything more annoying than punishingly happy people, right? So people who are, and this person loved it. She said, can you please make sure that you say that? You know, please make sure you talk about punishingly happy people. And I think this is exactly what you're getting into, Fizz. I'm there talking about positive psych, But it can't just be sales. You know, if you jump up and you're like, hey, guys, keep a gratitude journal and do a random act of kindness, yeah, people go, oh, piss off, you little hippie. You know, but if you can find a way to mix into the cauldron the idea that some people can be punishingly happy, there's, I think you're saying this, there's something about that that creates cut through. And I really like your language there around sincere irony. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you'd be familiar with the work of Oliver Berkman, right? He wrote a book called The Antidote: Happiness for People Who Can't Stand Positive Thinking.
Oh,
and
that's
interesting. It's this lovely British chap who he contributed to the Cleverness Biennial, Thoughtful Provocations for the Quietly Dissatisfied, a magazine.
Hey, that's cool artwork. Hold that up again, Fizz. That's some really nice artwork.
Wow. I'll need to send you a copy. Kim and I made this magazine in 2016.
Great.
But the thing he talks about is this, the notion of the negative path to happiness, where instead of forcing the happiness, you know, an example might be, you know, think about someone that you love or a pet that you have in your life, or an animal, or just someone who's significant to you, and imagine what would happen is you came home and they're no longer there. Something's happened.
Yep.
And immediately you get flooded with this sense of love and grief and appreciation, and you just immediately want to honor them. You immediately want to let them know how much you love them, how important they are in your life. And this realization hits so much more profound when we take that kind of pathway to it.
Brilliant. And think about how clever what you're saying is, because you know this, Fizzle. Your brain has absolutely no idea of what's really happening measured against something that you simulate. So when all those feelings get stirred up, when you simulate what it might feel like for your pet to have died, your mind sends all those same signals in, and that's why you can bring yourself to tears just through a simulation. And so I think that's a really clever way to start thinking about, well, what am I doing? You know, we're getting into the idea of meaning through suffering, but if you're doing that in a way that's strategic and tactical, well, let's get into it. One of the best, cleverest things that we can do as a species is mentally time travel. It's one of the best gifts we have. I'm not sure. I think you and I were talking about this, or I might have banged on about it recently, but just in the last 2 years, you know, it's really occurring to me that along with all this mindfulness talk and the power of now and being in the moment, we've got to entertain that our ability to mentally time travel is a gift, because what if right now is shit? If right now sucks, then you're gifted with the ability to simulate a future-focused mirage that you're moving towards. In the same way, Fizzle, that sometimes when you're having a bad day, you'll propel yourself on the fumes of happy memories. You remember how good that time was. So I love this idea about meaning through suffering, and sometimes doing that with mental time travel.
It's the Gurdjieffian, the Gurdjieff, who pioneered the fourth way concept, is very keen on meaning through suffering. And he would often write his books for the grandchildren generation, because he knew that would resonate, you know, in that delayed, what was it, the artist concept you talk about?
Discovery artist.
Discovery artist.
Gurdjieff was a discovery artist.
Yeah, totally. But this thing of, there's another thing I wanted to say is, like, I really resonate with the message being not so much be positive, but be present.
Yes.
And then kind of welcome in and honor all of the spectrum of emotions that emerge. Because I think that we're in this world at the moment that has a lot of suppressed sorrow, a lot of suppressed grief. And, you know, that the message of positive psych for a while has been overly, I'd say, superficial and saccharine compared to the full depth of the field, which is much more than just, you know, stay positive, you know.
On the money. There are so many people I look forward to us hanging out with. You really must meet my friend Todd Cashton. You know, he's such a gun in this, and his research and the way he talks about it is so in depth that it immediately, you understand straight away, this isn't bubblegum Mickey Mouse bullshit. You know, and for that reason, more relatable, which is what we're both agreeing on.
I've had this thought. I've been trying to come up with a nickname for you, by the way, J.A. The closest I can come with is Jaeger or Jaeger, you know, like Jaegermeister. Because J.A., it's a tricky thing to turn into a nickname, right?
I like Jaeger. I mean, but this is the thing, and I love talking about this. This is a cultural dimension, do you agree with? And I'm talking mostly about Aussies. I think it's true in the UK and New Zealand too. If you give someone the sense that you want to be nicknamed something, like, hey guys, can you call me Macca? You know, the second you tell someone what you want your nickname to be, your mates are like, there's no way in hell we're ever going to call you that. Right? And it works backwards too. It's like, oh, please don't call me Flimsy, fellas. And that, in that moment, get locked in.
That's it.
You're Flimsy. God. For life, sir.
So, well, I'm gonna try Jaeger. I don't know if it's Jaeger or Jaeger, but anyway,
Jaeger sounds like Jaeger bombs, doesn't it? I mean, I guess it fits with the I guess it fits with the theme of the pod.
But it's like Hunter, right? It's a cool name. Actually, my friend Simon Waller, you know, his nickname is Sai, but I've never been able to quite say it because it sounds like Sai. I know this is
sighing.
I get it. I'm going to try, but like,
does anyone call him sci-fi? Because he's a futurist, isn't he?
Probably. That'd be cool. But anyway, the point I was going to get to before this tangent was you mentioned someone, and I had this thought that, you know what, in future Kindred Spirits things, I've had these thoughts of like, oh, I can't wait for JA to meet this person and how good it would be have them on the show. Mm. And vice versa. You may know, folks, you bring them on and we have this kind of weird three-way thing where you get the witness the delight of me meeting someone that you know well and the questions that I bring and I can do the same for you. And there's this just way we can introduce our audience to like 100 more cool folks, you know?
I love what you're saying. If anyone's keen about the trajectory, I think Jason and I talk about maybe making 8 episodes as a duo and then starting to invite guests in. So, you know, keen for people's thoughts on that approach. But Fizz, you've already hit it on the head. We can't meet the other person until we're in session. I'm sure that's the wrong term. No priming. This thing will remain about emergence in the same way that we're only going to have courageous guests because when our guests say to us, oh, cool, guys, I'll come on your potty. What's the agenda? We'll go,
that's right. That's right. Yeah. Could you send through the questions? Having said that, though, we've got mutuals. We've got mutuals that we'll want on board. Like, we're going to do one with Michael Bungay Senior, which brings me to this point. I saw this thing that Michael was saying in response to someone, I think it was the Ready podcast, which is a wonderful podcast. Love the crew at the Ready. Mm. And he was saying something like, when you encounter cynical people, or maybe it was on Change Signal, I'm not sure. Cynicism is a result of someone has been hurt in the past. And so there's this kind of proactive defensiveness to protect them from being hurt again. And that hit hard because I realized a lot of the time that I show up in a more cynical disposition, it's because I've been wounded in the past. I've trusted and been heartbroken and I've just, it's just this, an energy I've had like, and I don't like being cynical, but I find myself there and I realize there's something there. I mean, I'm just curious as to your thoughts.
That's beautiful, mate. Well, I think you're being open and honest and deeply real. All of us, when we get burned, are left with no other choice but to calcify. I mean, I never asked you this, mate, and I'm thrilled to say that I've met Kim and you've got a miracle missus. I mean, that's established. You're a very blessed man. But have you ever had your heart broken, Fizz? Anyone ever rip out your soul?
Not in a... I know you mentioned... not that dramatically. I've had... Perhaps there's been friendships or I've projected a lot of like hopes and dreams into what I thought academia would be. And then when I got there, I realized, oh, it's not quite that, or what thought leadership might be. And it's not quite that, but not quite the same in a one-on-one relationship so much.
Well, I'm just curious, like the leap isn't that crazy, is it? But I think when you get burnt properly, then you calcify. A little callus goes over your heart. And I think most people who've been properly burnt before, you do step into your next relationship with a healthy dose of cynicism because it's self-preservation, mate, isn't it? I mean, you're protecting yourself. You're not going to drop your whole guard again and open yourself up to getting that burnt again. And I can remember feeling really sad about that because, you know, I've had my heart broken a couple of times, but I had it broken very badly when I was in my mid-20s. And, you know, I remember in that moment thinking, now I'm left with no choice but to protect a part of myself so that I can never be that damaged again, ever.
Yeah.
Right? And I think, then... you know, and if you're branding that as cynicism, I don't know. I mean, it's I guess we're getting into wordplay, but I don't think it's that. I don't...
Maybe, yeah.
You know, so long as you're not closing yourself off from opportunities and so long as it isn't eroding your curiosity.
Well, you say calcify, but when I met you and we were having this wonderful dinner, Michael Bungasenia was there, Leanne, Steph, it was exquisite on a frigid, Brisbane night. Yeah, yes, it was incredible, exquisite.
A frigid Brisbane evening fueled by the warmth of ouzo.
That's right. That was soon after I had just done my profound healing retreat, which involved plant medicines, which when it comes to calcified stories and wounds and stuff like that is incredibly dissolving. Mm. And there's a lot that had freshly shifted within me. And so even though we say calcified, even that calcification is not forever. There's still healing and transmutation that can be awakened in all of us, right?
I love that, mates. Mm. It can't be an eternal calcification. Or we need to entertain that even the most calcified among us possesses the ability to dissolve if you
want
to.
And isn't that the most beautiful thing? You see this hardened person and they've got these rigid boundaries or there's these ways and stuff like that. But when we can create, and it doesn't always have to be via plant medicine, it can be via the context that is attended to and the warmth and the relationality. But when you can see them soften and dissolve let the guard down and then open up their beautiful heart, it's just, it is the most, it is wonderful.
It's part of the magic, Fizz. And, you know, this is the weird sidestep, but I often find that when I think about playing around in the space of adult learning, I'll often compare and contrast it to my beautiful wife, who you know is a primary school teacher. So she's got the five-year-olds and I'm right at the other end with you. And often, wouldn't you agree that you're walking into a room of calcifieds? I mean, that's what I see every day. They're calcified. And part of the whole thing is trying to at least let them entertain that they could start to dissolve that callus. And it often doesn't happen in the room. You know, it's just a little seed that's planted that opens them up to the idea of unlearning something. And often the real magic happens after you bounce. But that's part of it, isn't it? Aren't we the anti-calcifiers? Make a t-shirt.
That's right. Soften and warm and dissolve.
Soften
ye orbs, damn it.
Soften ye orbs by the fire.
I love the point that I think that Michael was making here. I only saw it in a snippet, but you think about it in the context of organizational change and you have someone that's cynical and you're like, well, maybe they're not just being a stubborn prick here. Maybe there have been times in the past they put a lot of work in, it hasn't been recognized.
Yes.
They've cared for a team that's just been dissolved. And maybe there's a way that we can approach this with a bit more tenderness and warmth and curiosity and care.
You said it, brother. And the other one that's right in the wheelhouse of what you're saying, maybe they deserve to be jaded because whatever it is that you've got mixed up in feels to them like some cyclical, repeated, patterned bullshit that they've had to endure in the past. It's been rebadged, rebranded. It's supposed to feel shiny, but depending on their tenure,
they've seen this shit before again.
And now this prick's wearing a purple jacket. Oh, this asshole has a big fizzy beard.
Yeah.
That's Jacaranda, but that's part of it, isn't it? How can you hold any judgment for people in a position where it feels like the same song with a different bloody chorus? I mean, that's mind-numbing when you're on the wrong side of that.
And this reminds me of Professor Randolph Ness, who has a theory about depression. Depression being an adaptive mechanism that protects us from blind optimism. Mm-hmm, so what happens is when we're depressed, we go into a low energy state, so we're less risk taking.
Yes.
And it's like that you can see that as an evolutionary mechanism. It's like if you've got someone that's selling some blind optimistic promise of like, hey, I know you've been through other transformation, but this one's going to be different.
This one.
Then it's understandable that you're like, we'll see. And to be a little bit more conservative about the effort that you put into things. It's like, and this is what I think. I think a lot of folks, motivation-wise, psychology-wise, change-wise, don't spend enough time in the dark addressing, like walking alongside folks that may be like, I've been here before and it sucked. It's like, you know, spend some time there.
And what happened last time? And what was a lie that they didn't deliver on last time? And, you know, how did they reel you in? And were your hopes dashed? And why? And what happened? And how could this be different, you know, versus going, but this time it comes with bowls of mini Mentos. Right.
But this time it's AI. It's like AI-enhanced change.
This time we're going to use the false oracle. Hey, Fizzle, it's just occurred to me that it's probably about time I pull out this little bad boy.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Mate, I just realized something. We forgot to spin around at the start. That was happening in real time.
That was happening in real time for me. And I was like, you know what? That's okay. I'm not sure our listeners really quite appreciate that.
We can mix things up.
You know, we're so zany, so unpredictable, right?
I really like the dead air when you spin in your chair.
I do. You know, actually, Steph Clark mentioned that she appreciated the silence that happened with some of the whiskey tasting. It was a bit of a nice pause in amongst it. So
yeah, I heard that from someone else. And shout out, Steph. Steph's on holidays now. I hope you're really enjoying your much-earned time off, Steph Clark, you legend.
Yeah.
Now, Fizzle, this is the first time we bring one in from the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society. Okay, so those who are listening that really care, this is cask 128.20, Delightfully Bonkers. Okay.
Oh, I love their naming. They have great names.
They're the best. Like Lachlan, that Lachlan guy, I forget his surname, his tasting notes are so profound. He's so clever. You know, I was listening to him yesterday, and on one of the drams he was sampling, amongst all the clever stuff, one of the things he said was, violin resin, right? Violin resin. I mean, that's just so clever.
Yeah.
Different
to double bass resin, right?
And not cello resin. Yuck.
No. I mean, not talking fiddle, because, you know, it's like, steady on.
You lost me at fiddle. So, Fizzle, this one here is only 8 years old, and normally I don't go after such a low age statement, but it's taken me a long time to educate myself that older doesn't necessarily equal better when it comes to whiskey. You probably had that breakthrough.
And it's also the cask size as well. If it's on a smaller cask, it doesn't need as many years.
That's it. And then, you know, if you think about somewhere like Kavalam, where they're doing it in Taiwan, it's so hot there that the whole process happens infinitely faster because of the climate. So,
or Starwood's whole angle here in Melbourne is we have the four seasons in one day create like the enough variance in the temperature that speeds it up too. So
I love that, man. I love the story too. Now, legend, this one is actually a Welsh whiskey. Now, this is something interesting about the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society. The whole idea is you're not really supposed to know the distillery. I mean, it's not hard to Google.
Yeah.
Do you want to know where this is from, or do you want to maintain the mystery?
Tell me after.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Beautiful.
So this unicorn, we're doing the unicorn one, right? Yeah.
Yep. So
this jar that you've gave me, beautiful. I took this to Thailand just in case whilst I was there on assignment with Anytime Fitness, we had to have a chance to chat, but the timing didn't quite work. So it came all the way from Thailand back with me now. This is the first time I'm opening it. I'm going to nose it straight away from the jar, and then I'll pour it into my little glass.
Go for it, Fizz.
Oh, did we get the pop from your one?
I forgot to. I put it back on. I was hoping you didn't notice. Yeah. I forgot to pop it.
You do your pop first. Okay, I'm here for it. Oh,
that was good.
Yes, that was great.
Mate, crack that jar, Fizz.
Oof.
Now, I'm excited for you to taste this because it is true to its name. This is not like any whiskey I've ever had. I'm going to reserve any of my commentary until you've had your first sip, but what are you getting on the nose, brother?
All right, hang on. It's like papaya or...
Ooh, I like that you went there straight away. Lots of tropical notes.
Definitely some banana and...
Definitely banana, maybe even nectarine and banana leaf.
Did you say nectarine, like as nectarine?
Nectarine. How did I pronounce it? Nectarine.
Oh, I love it. Nectarine.
It tastes like nectarine and banana.
Every time you say what I say, poem... Yeah. I love it how you say, like, P-O-M-E, poem.
Poem. I just say it super bogues. Poem. Are you reading any poems? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so tropical.
And I get sort of vanilla cake as well.
Yeah. Yeah, vanilla sponge cake.
But then if you really go deep, Fizz, can you tell that this is a cask strength? Because I'm telling you now, legend, are you ready for the ABV? This one's at 59.9%.
So do you know what happened? Because I said I'm going to sniff it straight after opening it. The first thing was like pure alcohol. I was like, what the? Jesus.
Well, that's going to put hairs on your chest.
Okay, great. Well, we could set this on fire if we wanted to. But
So those of us... Those non-whiskey drinking listeners, a cask strength whiskey is anything above an ABV of 50%. You know, once you start getting up in the mid to high 50s, they start getting very dangerous. This one's basically on 60%. A real troublemaker fizzle. Like, if I'm going to have one of these, I'll probably just have a whiskey for the whole evening.
Well, it's early afternoon too, so this day is a wonderful write-off. So being over 50% too means that you could set this on fire.
Yes.
Not that you would want to, because the the actual, it's not simply, I don't drink for the alcohol. It's like I don't drink coffee for the caffeine, but there is something of an effect in that has in the way it enhances the mouthfeel, the way it goes through. On the nose, I'm also getting like white jelly bean.
Oh, that's interesting, mate. I just got the inside of a mango skin, like peel the mango, smell the skin, because you've got the mango, but there's also the green growth that is its outer exterior. Great. Okay.
All right. Are you ready,
Are you ready, old sport? Are you doing the
micro?
Let's do it,
buddy. Wow.
How fruity is this whiskey?
My God. It's like giving me... Have you ever had Nerds?
Yes, mate. Like Fizzle, it's so funny. I was just about to say Skittles, right?
Like, yes, this Skittles. Feels like
you're getting punched in the mouth by a packet of Skittles. Insane. Unprecedented. Mm. I've never had a whiskey this tropical. If it wasn't for such a high ABV, you could trick yourself into thinking that you've got a glass of fruit juice.
Yeah. Oh, man, the finish on that.
Go ahead, brother.
It just brings me back to one of the things I would do, because I'd walk home from school and maybe I like had 20 cents or something, and I'd go get a bag of mixed lollies from the deli, because I'd just have it there, and then shovel in like your red frogs and your
pineapples.
Yeah. Hope that, you know, the worst thing about the bag of mixed lollies is when they had those teeth things in there. You ever see those fake teeth?
Yeah.
They weren't that nice. Like the joke wore off like after the first time. But
the weird thing about the teeth was such a gimmick, because you'd shove it in your teeth and do an awkward smile, but it actually tasted like sort of gelatinous mint. They were kind of grot when you think about the flavor of those teeth.
Yeah, things. Like a dentist came up with a lolly idea.
That's it. But mate, honestly, What else are you getting from this?
Well, in the mixed bag of lollies, this is more so the finish. You know how you'd get those bananas that had this beautiful kind of soft texture on the outside?
Yep.
But it's like, there's that.
You got
it. There's a strawberries and cream kind of like aftertaste.
No, mate, I think the banana thing's really close to it, because those bananas, they have that musk-like texture to them. And they're often kind of covered in that dust. And it's that dust surrounding the musky banana lolly. That's what comes through on the finish.
Yes. Yes, the dust of the musky banana lolly. Yeah.
Yep, there it is. You found it. You found it. That's it. Amazing. And very dangerous. So
that is so bonkers.
I was looking forward to sharing that one. That's why I held it back a few episodes, because I don't think we're not going to have anything like this anytime soon. It's an unprecedented, very unique, I'll go as far as saying strange. It's a strange whiskey.
Yeah, this is probably the most distinct whiskey that I can remember ever tasting. Man, I'm loving this so much.
Yeah, I knew you'd like this.
You know, before we go into fake ad and things like that, I had this awkward question to ask. I kind of missed my moment, so I'm forcing it here.
Good.
whilst we're half a cask strength deep. You know how we're talking about when we will have a misunderstanding?
Yes.
I wanted to jokingly ask, so what do you think I'll do to piss you off?
What could you possibly do? You know, I don't know where I read this, but, you know, when you and I first started hanging out and obviously blowing up each other's LinkedIn because of the way the algo works, I seem to see everything that you post and vice versa, which is fantastic, by the way. Someone said, oh, Jason Fox, you're drawn to him because of his head, but then you stay for his heart, right?
Oh, that's nice.
But that's exactly what happens, man. Like, I think people that only know you cerebrally would think that guy's fun, he's witty, he's clever, he's edgy, he's progressive. You know, there are lots of things about you that are so profound and entertaining. But then when you get into the actual land of the fizzle, you know, as a friend of yours, you've got a really warm heart. And so it's very difficult for me to simulate how it is that you might piss me off.
That's very nice.
I don't know how you could do it, man. You know, and again, it could be something really mundane. Like, I remember when you and I first started writing to each other on Signal, you're someone who, in a way that I think is really impressive, you know how to protect your time, right? So if I fire you a message on Signal, but you're busy, we might have a 48-hour period before we come around to it again. But even that would be a really sort of vapid, judgmental misinterpretation of your character. Jason isn't writing back because he doesn't give a shit. Mm. It's a nonsense, you know? So I don't know, mate. I find it really difficult to...
Well, that's very nice.
Yes. Well, let me flip the question. How might I innocently piss you off, kind sir?
Well, let me... Like, my insecurity for you is that I do worry sometimes that I bring a bit more of a kind of moribund meta crisis, you know, everything's bad and stuff going on. I'm trying to get out of that, but it still remains true. And I worry sometimes that I don't want to be a vibe kill, you know?
I don't know. You know, it's that quote that I'll misquote now where they say something like the more you know, or the more educated you are, the easier it is to not feel stoked, to not feel joy, you know, and that's an unnerving idea. But I see that one kicking around all the time. Like, it would appear that some of the more cerebral among us struggle to have an ongoing jovial disposition. I mean, what do you make of that, Fizz?
Yeah, I relate. I mean, I feel like there's, you know, the more you know you don't know, and also the more that your attention is like open to things that, but this is I don't want to without kind of getting because the doom is always there on the periphery, but there's also a thing of like there are such glimmers of joy, and I think that what I love about the time with you is that there's a rekindling of the magic of what we're doing and why we're here, and I think this is a fire that we can both tend to. And
100%.
I am feeling the effects of the cast strength already.
Yeah, man. It's a little troublemaker. Because we shot this one at 1 in the afternoon, so we've just set ourselves up for
it's going to be a lovely
soft landing.
I cannot think of anything there is a sense of you know, character and disposition and frequency and warmth, and I can't imagine I can't imagine something that would piss me off. But I also know if I'm like, I like how you frame it. It's like, it's not pissed off, but it's like, oh, that thing emerged and I felt this, and this is the story I made of it. That's like, that it can happen. That it'll can
be
happen.
It'll be a wrongly pointed assumption. And that's why us diving on the idea about gentle nudge, real-time observation, serve it up fresh, plummet into the Discord in real time. That's the smartest way forward, because there's every chance that the story that either of us is telling ourselves is not true and real. And so the quicker you can get to putting that to bed and dissolving assumption, the smoother the trajectory. But I've said it twice already, man. I think that you and I are an upward spiral. And I've got a handful of mates like that, people who I would refer to as lifetime friends. But when I think about how long I've known them and the narrative of our friendship, it could only be described as an eternal crescendo. Would you be interested in one of those, old sport?
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And there's also something, just to yang your yin or vice versa, there is the whole hermetic, I know you're a part of that, you've read the Kabbalion. You know, there is at the above, so below, like it's an upward spiral, but I reckon we're going to go deeper and deeper as well, whilst also going upwards.
On the money, like, it's the descend.
Yeah, descend, descend. It's like upwards, inwards, outwards, and beyond.
Mate, I like that, because we're back at being nebulous. We're back at celebrating the idea that everything expands and contracts. Everything does.
Yeah.
And if we are going to continue to go upward, then if you think about the counterpoint to it, all the downward is doing is helping to create an even solid, more solid anchor point and root system. Fantastic.
That's it. That's it.
Fantastic, brother. Are you ready for a fake ad? Oh, it's your turn. This is your fake ad.
Right. Oh, shit. here we go. The stakes just rise.
Here we go.
Okay, fake ad time. Well, here I am. I'm in my pajamas. I've only got a few hours before we're recording the next episode, so I've got to get this fake ad recorded and then uploaded and integrated and then the whole thing exported and then uploaded on YouTube and on the website and so on, so it hits your podcast feeds. So I thought I might sidestep the fake ad thing slightly and give you a fake ad. Or a Schrödinger's fake ad. You know Schrödinger's box, yes, where we have a cat inside. Is the cat alive or is the cat dead? It's a morbid, horrible experiment. I'm glad that we don't... Well, I don't know if we do. I'm glad that we don't routinely make these types of experiments anymore. The answer to Schrödinger's box is the cat is both alive and dead at once. It's until that we observe the state that it collapses into its possibility. There's also Schrödinger's douchebag. Schrödinger's douchebag is where you make an offensive statement that could be hilarious, and you won't know if it's hilarious or offensive until you actually say it. And if it's offensive, then you can say to folks, I was just joking. And if it's hilarious, you can reap all the credit and consider yourself witty. Schrödinger's douchebag. Unfortunately, I fall into that role sometimes. This is Schrödinger's fake ad. Is it a real ad or what is going on? Is it a fake ad? Is it a meta fake ad? What is Jason doing at the last hour here? I thought actually, given that in a moment's time you're going to hear my past self sort of groan and lament about this fake ad thing, and then John Anthony is going to say it's not a competition, which is the perfect thing to say if you are so good at it. he transcends competition, whereas I'm still like, ugh, JA is so good at this. What am I doing? A plea, if you will, from me. This could be a slot that, if you are a burgeoning distillery, if you have whiskey samples you'd like to send to chaps to partake of and exonerate and exemplify and, say lovely things about, this could be a little slot, a little shout out to you. If you're a venue like Whiskey and Ailment or, the Everly or whatever it is, and you'd like a little slot in a tiny little podcast where two folks try to have intellectually honest and engaging conversation without podcast voice about things that pertain to thought leadership, facilitation, speaking, performance, authenticity, self-development and growth, positive psychology and more, this could be a slot for you too. And I mean that in a genuine sense. All you need to do is reach out to us and, the bar is currently so low. We'd be so happy to have you on board. So there we go. I mean, assuming that you're not, just going to advertise for weapons manufacturer or something like that. As long as it meets our ethical standards, you'd be welcome company. So Schrödinger's fake ad. I hope you enjoyed that. And now back to our regular programming. This is these fake ads, I'm like, your last one was so... The emotion you have in your voice, the pacing, like it was so beautiful, and I loved it, and I was like, oh man, people will be like, oh, it's Jason's turn, okay.
You got to bring your own flavor to it.
I've got to bring my own flavor. I've got to like not into this too heavy. Gosh.
The fake ad's not a competition, legends.
It's just
time for a little bit of fuckery injected into the pod.
To be honest, though, when I did the last fake ad, my one, I got to learn a bit about audio software that I haven't used in a long time, and that was fun.
Great, see? So, extract the learning. Outstanding, sir.
I should have checked with you. How are you for timing today? Because we've gone over time.
Oh, we pushed it. Oh, I'm glad you asked, actually. I will go and collect my beautiful daughter from school at some point, but we've definitely got time for a little bit of bad advice.
All right. Well, you know what's happening. The first thing that you need to do is consider dying.
Die.
If you want your work to be appreciated, you know what's getting in the way. Your mortal coil.
Oh, what's that? No one listened to the EP that you released in January? Die. Okay? Just die on the assumption that you'll be posthumously famous.
God, yeah, that's so yeah. Grim. Actually, yeah. You know, there is something to be said about, you know, we talked about multitudinous selves, and there could be like a past self of you dies. Mm. So you're like, yeah, that was me then. You do it, you kill off that aspect of yourself, you grow and you form, and then people love that past self's work. And then you're like, why do you love The Game Changer? I don't like that book anymore. I've moved on.
But think about that. My dear friend Kelly, and shout out to Kelly for listening. She has written six leadership programs based on The Game Changer and had amazing cut through with heavy hitting government clients. So, you know, isn't that an interesting example of this discovery artist piece? You know, you look back at that book and sometimes have a slightly curled lip or a cocked eye, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have value. And it also doesn't mean that it won't continue to, you know, it's such a great example.
Thank you. That's very nice. I'm trying to be more gracious. There is something to be said about allowing almost ritualized mini deaths of self as we continue to, you know, evolve and like compost and regrow and renew and stuff like that. I don't subscribe to that. You are a one fixed self. I think there is an essence that persists through it all, but I think that we're a poem. We're living into the poem, and there's variance.
And I think, you know, I think one thing that we've surfaced that's great to double down on is I think we need to entertain allowing our echoes to remain. Just leave them there. I had a weird one last year. I did a keynote with Macquarie, and when the guy gave me the gig, he said, hey, I love that video that you did on YouTube where you had the little kids' Easter egg toys. And that was this thing that I shot in the pandemic when I was home in my house in misery, you know, depressed and struggling and trying to pull myself back together after I had 11 months of work eroded out of my calendar. And I'd forgotten that I even put stuff on YouTube. I think there's like two videos on there, Jace, and they're not very good, man, you know. But I got this lovely bloke saying to me, hey, man, you know, I really enjoyed that Easter egg video that you did. And I'm not saying it's the reason why I got the keynote, but it certainly contributed to me landing that gig. You got to leave your echoes around, man.
Also a thing of like... when we encounter someone's echoes, their simulacra, the kind of the avatars of distant past that they've put out there, we also got to know that that's just a little breadcrumb. That's not who are now. That's just like a little tease, a little appetizer, a little bit of stale bread to be I like
a little
that.
A little Hansel Gretel crumb thrown leading you towards the witch's oven.
What's some other bad advice, eh?
I love how we tried to give bad advice and then just didn't. That was the other bad advice. You know, as soon as you make a video or a piece of content or publish a newsletter or upload a song, if in that moment of silence you don't hear from anyone, delete it. Delete it straight away because it's probably a piece of shit.
Yeah, that's right. And you're a piece of shit too.
That's even better. Yeah. Delete it because you are a piece of shit.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's what, remember that whenever you get feedback is that if you know, you've got to be open to all feedback at all the time. It's the only way that you learn. So if anyone's giving you feedback, particularly unsolicited feedback that catches you unawares, take it right to the heart, you know, like just
let it right all the way in. If anything, let it change your behavior or even collapse all future possibilities of you ever doing anything like that again.
Because if you want to succeed in this attention economy, I'm like mumbling my words.
This is the car key. This is the 60% working its ways.
You have to bold yourself into being likable to all people. That means that you need to pay attention to data, feedback, obfuscate any inklings or your own intuitive knowing, and preference the perspectives of others and the algorithm that'll tell you what you need to be.
Jason, I'm going to say something to you.
Yeah. My body is ready. Bring it.
I didn't even have the next part. I just wanted to set it up. It was going to be something like the game changers shit.
Oh, don't. God. It's not that bad.
Are you kidding? Mate,
it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. People like it and that's okay.
Anyway, still selling.
I'm literally feeling quite tipsy at the moment. This does enter into a career limiting.
No, they are. I mean, and that's why I tried to warn you, but I think you knew. I think you knew even as the lid came off that this one's a naughty little pickle.
So good.
That's your cask keys.
Even the linger. I want to join the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society. Well, now I'm a convert. Cool
talk about. I mean, I'd love you in it because we can start comparing what we're going to grab. In fact, if you jump in it, we'll grab different things, and then that way we get to taste the full rainbow of fruit flavor back to the
That's
Skittles.
That's right, and we can get Australia Post sending each other samples across, like, you know, from Sydney to Melbourne and vice versa, and
across the Great Divide. Beautiful. Well, legend, I just heard the office door breeze open. I didn't look, but I heard it breeze open, which makes me think that maybe I need to dive back into dad mode.
Okay.
But, mate, a genuine pleasure, as always, Fizz.
Yeah, cheers, man. Wonderful. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This is Kindred Spirits. This is an unfailing wonder. We appreciate any validation you can send our way.
All validation and positive feedback. Welcome. If anyone wants to say something to us, you best keep those comments to yourself.
All right. Shall we bang the thing?
Always a pleasure, Fizzle. Thank you, brother.